بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Every zamana has its own unique challenge. Shortly after the time after Nabi Sam had left the world, there was the challenge of the Murtaddeen. Some people had refused to pay zakat to the state. Some had turned away from Islam, and there was a whole host of wrongs that took place in that era. And Allah Ta'ala has promised for this ummah that there will be a group that will stand out for the truth. Any zamana, any age, there is any batil, and there will be a group that will stand up to defend the truth. There won't be a time where the people of batil will overcome and overwhelm the people of the truth. So this is a promise of Allah Ta'ala, and it stood then and it will stand up till this day, and it will stand till the day of Qiyamah. Then after the Sahaba Kiram, then you had the Tabi'een, Tabi Tabi'een. Then they had their own challenges for preservation of the Hadith, preservation of Deen in its true form. It has to be preserved, so they had to do all these things. And they went to great lengths, great lengths, traveled on foot, hot, arid, dry lands. They had to travel, no food at times. Someone is collapsing on the way, someone is dying on the way, but they didn't leave that. So they preserved the deen. That was the challenge of that age. So in every age, every time, you will have some challenge, some problem. Then you have two classes of people. One class who has a better understanding of deen, and they are more committed to deen. And you have the second group who don't have that understanding of deen, and they don't have the commitment of deen that is desired. So that's a challenge, and this is a challenge in this age. Many of us, when we go to the Muslim lands, Makkah, Medina, Munawwara, and we see deen flourishing, then our heart's desire is that we could also settle in these type of places. Who won't want to settle there? Who won't want to die there? Now in all that, the challenge is that you stay where you are, you remain firm, and you encourage others. Because though for your personal self, it may be better for you to be moving over there, but staying here, remaining here, it's a great trial. It's a great test. Number one. Number two, the people, local people, wherever you are living, they find a lot of solace, a lot of comfort with your presence. Ulama, Busugana Deen, Mashaykh. If you are around, then they find a lot of solace, they find a lot of comfort, they find a lot of ease. Okay, now there is someone to take us through. And if you are gone, then now where should they turn to? They want some direction, they want some leadership, they want some type of solution in their matters. Where do they turn to? So if they want some leadership, they want some guidance, they can't go to a Christian, they can't go to a Jew, they can't go to a Hindu, they can't go anywhere. And you are not around as well. So then what do? So then they become like sheep wandering around. There's no direction for them. So though for your personal self, it may be better that you go over, but in the broader interest of the public, then it's better that you just live here, more especially those that have caught some dini consciousness and awareness, ulama, etc., then they should remain. So that these people find a little bit of solace and a little bit of understanding. So in every age you will find this. You will find this problem, you will find these trials going on. And our work will be then first to identify what is the problem in the area that you are living in. This is the first thing. You don't know the problem, then you don't know how to work. If you know the problem, then that's half the battle you have won, because you know you identified the problem. Now the next half is now that then after you've understood what's the problem, now try and look for a solution. You don't only look for a problem, but then in your mind you think, alright, this is a problem, then what can I do to rectify, to bring about some type of sanity and understanding, what should I be doing? Right. So this is where we stand, and this is where some of us fail and some of us score. Some of us we fail, and some of us we score, we win, we think positively, constructively, alright, this is a situation, now what do I do? Should I just throw in the towels and say that I am helpless in the situation, or do how much I can do? I will do something, perhaps after I am gone someone else will come and continue, but let me start it off. So this is what Allah Pak likes, that you're doing and you're doing how much you can manage. Right. In Hazrat Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullah's time, there were similar problems. On one side there was a Shia problem going on, then you had a Bidati problem going on, then you had a Christian problem going on. So these problems that we see now, it's nothing new. It always was. And our advantage here is that many of the problems that we go through now, they have already been experienced in India and Pakistan. Just we just have to scratch the surface, find out where this thing happened, and then the ulama in that area, how did they confront those problems? So we get a lot of hope, a lot of guidance, and a lot of understanding. But that is if we are connected to our elders, and we find that they had gone through all this, they'd gone through all these things here, when this Islamic school thing started off here in 1981-82. So, Maulana Ayub Kachwi, that is the head of the Talimi board in Johannesburg, he spoke to Ustaz Rahmatullahi that this is what they're embarking upon, Islamic school. So what's your comment? What do you think about it? So Ustaz Rahmatullahi's answer was that we have already gone through this in India. People start off in the name of Islam. They start off an Islamic school. In the name of Islam they start it off. And then it is a pure circular thing. It's got nothing to do with Islam. The whole focus is the circular. The whole focus is the school. So the school will rate its progress in proportion to the circular and to the circular subjects, not in proportion to the Islamic subjects. You will not find that any school is advertising for itself and says that in the Islamia, and this was the success rate in the Islamia, the matric level, so many A's they have scored in the Islamia. Yes, they will say that in the circular subjects, this is the A's that they have scored. So many university entrants they have got, and so many have now become CAs or doctors and all that. But they will not boast of them at all. So many became so pious, they went to Jamaat, they became dini conscious, they're leading righteous life. They will not boast about themselves in that way. So what you understand is initially it takes off in the name of Islam, and thereafter Islam is just a number. It is just a old furniture on the side. There's no reality in it. So what I'm getting at is that this trials that we go through, India and Pakistan have already gone through the same things. Same things they've gone through. All we need is to and just find out a little bit. But you all gone through this, you all went through this, then how did you all respond to it, what you all found, and what worked, what didn't work, If we look around, inshallah, we'll find some answers, we'll find some solutions. It's not that there's no solution, it's a lost case and something totally new and we have to find real solutions for it. It's not like that. But because of several factors, like for example, our numbers are very limited as compared to India. So when a problem takes place, then we make a big noise about it, very, very big noise about it. But when you look at the numbers, then there's just a few handful of people, and we need to understand how to work amongst them. It's just a few handful people of people that are creating a problem, and then how do we work with them? So our problem is that when we see the problem, then like they had made a big publicity of it, then we also make a big publicity, big noise about it. The problem makers, they'll make a big noise about it, and we also will get into the rut and make a big noise. And then at the end, we look at it, that, you know, what did we achieve from this? We find, oh, we didn't achieve anything out of this. Very little we have achieved. We spend so much of our energies, our wealth, our time, and what did we get at the end? We didn't get anything. So we spend so much, and the production was very, very little. So it was not like how we had envisaged and how we had imagined. So there are some simple structures, simple ways that we have to follow. Simple ways to follow. And you follow those simple ways, and more especially the ways that were experimented by our elders, be it India, Pakistan, or other countries. Because we come from India, Pakistan, so we are quite familiar with the lifestyle there. We are familiar with the people, the folks. So we can identify with them much more easily than if we have to relate to some Arab country, for example. There's a language barrier. We don't know them. They don't know us. Then we don't know the direction that they are taking. Right? Like I said, that in the Arab countries also, you have some cases that are totally lost. Totally lost. Some are talking about cutting down and discounting the roza, bringing it from the time it is to about 1/5 of the roza or half of the roza. If it is 20 hours, then bring it to 10 hours or 15 hours. So bring it to 3/4 the size of the roza. If it is 5-time namazes, then bring it to 3 times the namaz. So they are on this path of compromising, of discounting, all that, right? So then we will not know those people. And when we don't know them, then we don't know which type of group to identify with. In the meanwhile, they may be good people also, very great people, far greater than we can imagine. But the fact that we've got a language and communication barrier, we don't know, and we don't identify. Yesterday someone was telling me that they're going to Turkey for some relief operation. So he wants to go and meet some of the pious people there. What do I have to say about it? I asked him, but do you know the pious people there? The university student. So I asked him, but do you know those pious people? He said, I don't know. Then how are you going to make out? How are you going to identify? Some got a topi, got a big tasbih, long kurta, and a jubba. So you'll see he's a buzruk, he's a pious person. How are you going to make out? So your intention is great. Your intention is great that you're going to meet some pious person. Alhamdulillah, we appreciate the intention. But there must be some logic, some reasoning behind your intentions. That do you know the person, you understood him, you know his history, you've got any background knowledge about this person. You've got all that background knowledge, then you joined up with him. Now, you know, you joined the right truck. You join the right wagon, you join it. But you got no history about the person. All the reason that you will join him is for two. It's because he's got a lot of following, or he's looking very outstanding in the group, in the crowd. He's very much outstanding, very conspicuous in the crowd. So on account of his following and his conspicuous nature, therefore I'm following him. But is that the base to follow anybody? Then later you realize, no, he's got some other agendas. Some years back, had to go for Hajj or Umrah or something. And I had to do my tickets, 1982-83. So I took one friend of mine's. He was taking me to the travel agency and get my tickets. So I went with him to do the booking. Well, incidentally, it was a Friday. Because I was supposed to leave the next week. Perhaps it was Ramzan month, the starting of Ramzan. I had to do my tickets and was leaving the next week. So, whilst we were talking, that this is the itinerary that we want, so that woman that was attending to us, she went to do something. Meanwhile, she had a Muslim name from the placard that they have near their desk. So she had a Muslim name. So I told my friend, hey, it's Friday, it's Juma, and it is Ramzan, and this woman is not dressed right. There's no scarf on the head. She doesn't have an ijar. Does she show any respect to Juma? Anyway, this friend of mine was a little bit of a loose cannon, you know. So he went and told that lady, you know, Mawana says that it's Juma, you're supposed to be wearing ijar, you should have a scarf on your head at least. So he went and told that auntie. So that auntie, she flipped. She just flipped. She said, you know me, I'm such a pious person. You know, my sheikh, my buzrug, he knows who I am. And because of my piety, he gave me his jubba. And he gave me so much of tabarruks, you know, all that he gave me. And you people, what you know? I know what is haqiqat, I know what is shariat, I know what is marifat. What you people know? So, I couldn't further the conversation. Because I could see now the level that she's coming back, she's coming from. So I said, it's pointless me discussing with this woman. Because she feared that she's very high, she's reached in a very high position. Right? Whereas they don't know, لِكُلِّنْ جَعَلْنَا مِنْكُمْ شِرْعَةً وَمِنْهَاجًا. For every person, we have prepared, one is a shariat. Shariat is the do's and the don'ts. In every religion, right, whether it's in Islam, or in the way of Musa alayhi salam, or Isa alayhi salam. So every religion had one constitution. It had a constitution, it had a law. You call it the Mosaic law, you call it whatever other law, but there was a law in place. This will be your do's, this will be the don'ts. This will be the prohibitions, and this will be the do's, right? So in every religion we have that. Shirata wa minhaja. And second is, if there is a law, then there is also what people call a tariqat. In other words, how to get there. This is a law, right? But then how to get to that law, we will show you a mannerism, a way how you get there. Like I tell you, you know, to read the Quran Sharif is compulsory. Every Muslim must be able to recite the Quran Sharif, it's compulsory, right? Don't we say that? We say that. But now, after saying that the learning of the Quran Sharif is compulsory, every Muslim should learn, should endeavor to learn and recite the Quran Sharif. So the natural consequence and the question that will follow, by how do I go about learning the Quran Sharif? Then we'll tell the child, all right, you go to a madrasa, go to some Hafiz sahab, Mawlana sahab, he will teach you how to recite the Quran Sharif. Right? Don't we say that? Right. So going to the Mawlana or madrasa may not be faraz, but that's the way that you will have to adopt if you need to learn the Quran Sharif. If you're not going to adopt that, then adatan, then generally, I won't say it's a rule, but generally you will not be able to recite the Quran Sharif. If you don't humble yourself and go to a Mawlana, go to a Hafiz sahab and follow the procedures that he will ask you to follow. You don't follow those procedures, you won't be able to recite the Quran Sharif. You say, no, I want to learn tajweed as well. Say, no, alright, go to this other Mawlana. He will teach you tajweed as well. He's a Qari sahab, so he will teach you all these things. So this was a procedure. It was not the goal, actual goal. But if you don't follow this procedure, you can't reach the goal. You will have to go through this procedure in order to reach the goal. Right? Similar, you'll find a madrasa, right? The madrasa will tell you that if you need to learn Arabic, Quran Sharif, Tafsir, Hadith, etc., then you will have to follow a certain procedure. You come at a certain time, we will attend to you, we will give you attention, and then there will be a semester, there will be 3 terms, you will have to follow a 7-year course. In that 7-year first year, this will be what we will offer you. The 2nd year, this is what we will offer you, and this will be your days of studies, this will be your holidays. You follow it, inshallah, after 7 years, then you will know some Arabic, you will understand the Quran, you will be able to understand the Hadith, you will be able to understand Arabic grammar, you will be able to understand laws, etc. You will be able to understand. Now, if that person turns around and he says, but this is nowhere mentioned in the Quran Sharif and the Hadith, that you must go through a 7-year course with holidays and exams and periods and morning classes and evening classes and then night classes, late night classes. Nowhere it states in the Quran that you must go through this. So yeah, definitely there is no mention about this. But in order to get there, you'll have to follow this. If you don't follow this, then you won't get there. See? If you don't follow this, then you will not get there. Like the Quran Sharif says that you must go for Hajj, right? You must go for Hajj. So, that's the whole law. لِلَّهِ عَلَى النَّاسِ حِجُّ الْبَيْتِ مَنِ اسْتَطَاعَ إِلَيْهِ سَبِيلًا. So, the Quran says you must perform Hajj. But nowhere did the Quran Sharif says that you must have a passport, you must apply for a visa, you must apply for accreditation, then you must then board the plane, book a ticket, and have a valid passport, and you must have so much of currency, and then only will you be able to do the Hajj. Nowhere the Quran Sharif says it, the Hadith doesn't say it. So then, when the Hadith doesn't say it, and the Quran Sharif doesn't say it, then why do you say that you have to adopt all these procedures? What will you say that? You'll say that normally, generally, you can't do the Hajj if you don't do these procedures. You have to do these procedures, then you'll be able to do the Hajj. The same in a madrasa, you want to learn the word of Allah Ta'ala, you want to learn the message of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, then you will have to follow a procedure. You follow the procedure, then you will get there. So, this is what is called tasawuf. See, tasawuf is not the goal in itself, but it is a way to the goal. It's a procedure to the goal. Tariqat. It's a way to that goal. Like you say, you know, I need to be committed to the Sharia, and I need to get a facelift. I need to get a quality in my namaz, etc. I need to leave out haram, impermissible things, come onto the line. You say, alright, there is a way for you, so you must follow this certain procedure. Different people, they will work out different procedures for them. One person came to one buzruq, and he says, no, I need to have some procedure in my life, and I am a robber by trade, by profession, I am a robber, I steal, and this is what I do for a living. You can't ask me to leave this profession of mine because I depend on my sustenance, on the sustenance of my children, or on robbing. So you can't ask me to leave the profession. But anything else, if you ask me to do, then I'm prepared to do it. So the buzruq thought for a moment, and then he tells him, you know what? All right, you have tied me up that you can't leave your profession. Then I also got the right to ask you some things. You tied me up. I have also the right then to ask you and make some demands upon you. Say that my demand to you is this, that you see, you are going to perform namaz no matter where you are. Wherever you be, but you must perform your namaz. Whatever the time, the moment the time of the namaz sets in, then you're going to perform your namaz. See what you have? See what you have? Wherever you are, the moment the time of the namaz sets in, then you're going to perform your namaz. And you don't want to just perform your namaz like this, you're going to call the azan loud, the loudest pitch of your voice, you will call the azan and you'll do your namaz. So, isme kaun si mushkil baat hai? What a, it's not a big, it's not a train smash that. To call the azan loudly and to read namaz, I will do that, I'll comply. The olden days, people were like that. If they gave you their word, then they would stick. They would hold. They will remain by that. They won't. Then move away from their word. So they would remain very firmly committed to the word that they have given to anybody. Anybody they give their word, then they will remain firmly committed. They will not move away from that. So that was a unique thing in the people of the past. Today, it is not like that. Today, they are committed but to money. Everybody is committed to money. Where there is money, I am there. Where there is some enjoyment, I am there. But to be committed to my word, to honor my word, to honor my pledges and promises, then we don't consider that to be an important thing. Therefore, you can't give a direction to a person very easily, because he's not committed. He's not committed, he doesn't honor his word. So then how can you guide him? You can guide the person if he's committed, if he's pledged, no, I'm going to do this. Then you can give him a guidance. But if he's not committed, then how are you going to correct the person? He wants to have an A-level pass in matric, an A-level pass in university, in medicine, whatever. But he doesn't want to be committed to the cause, to the curriculum. Then how is he going to get this? He'll get that if he remains committed. If he doesn't remain committed, then how is he going to get there? So anyway, this commitment is required, whatever you are doing. But in the old days, this is what happened. Whether it was a robber, whether it was a fornicator, whether it was whatever. But if they gave you their word, then they would remain committed. Then they won't move away from it. And وَلَا تَكُونُ كَالَّتِي نَقَدَدْ غَزْلَهَا مِنْ بَعْدِ قُوَّةٍ أَنْكَاثَ أَوْفُوا بِأَهْدِ اللَّهِ إِذَا أَهَدْتُمْ وَلَا تَنْقُدُ. So when you are given your word, then you remain firm to it. Then don't move away. Don't move away, don't shift away then. In the Quran Sharif gives an illustration, كَالَّتِي نَقَدَدْ غَزْلَهَا مِنْ بَعْدِ قُوَّةٍ أَنْكَاثَ. It's like a woman, over the whole day, she spent in making her yarn, you know, from the kya kehte hai dore ko daga, what do you call it in English, thread, yeah. So from the threads, right, from the threads you build up and you make up a yarn. Now this woman, the whole day she spent in making up her yarn. She's got those threads and the warp and the weft. Tana bana, they call it in English. The warp and the weft, they put it in a certain arrangement and you get a cloth. So the whole day she spent in making the yarn, right? And at the end of the day, then she breaks her yarn. Whole day she spent in building that yarn. By the end of the day, she goes and breaks the yarn. So, did she achieve anything? Did she achieve? Her whole energy was spent in making up that yarn, right? And at the end of the day, whatever she made, she broke that whole thing. So, she's at the same point that she had started. She didn't make any type of progress. So, if a person doesn't remain committed to his pledge, then he's like that. That he hasn't made any progress. So, in the old days, this was the position of people. If they had given their word, then they would remain committed. Then they won't move. Not right, not left. They remain committed. So this robber, he pledged with the Buzurg, no. You told me that I must call the Azan wherever I am. So I'm going to call the Azan. At the loudest pitch of my voice, I'm going to call the Azan. I'm not going to move away from this. Anyway, he started off, he continued his robbing, cheating, whatever he had to do, he continued. So, he was looking around his neighborhood that there's going to be a wedding in a wealthy person's home, right? It's going to be a wedding. It's a winter season, so they will start their dhoom-dham. They will start at around Zohar Asar time, and perhaps, you know, because it's a winter, so they may finish up everything at about 10, 11 o'clock, you know, because it's such a long night, 11 o'clock, latest 12 o'clock, they finish everything. By 1 o'clock, they'll be fast asleep. You know, they'll be like logs, like stones, you can't move them. They're so fast in the sleep. So that would be the right time to go and break into that home. And it's a wedding home, so because it's a wedding home, so they'll have all the jewelry, all the jahaz, all the mehr coming in. And then all the guests will have their own jewelries. Guests will have their jewelries, their nose jewelry, their finger jewelry, anklets, bracelets, all these things here. So it's the right time for me to go and plunder. Anyway, he worked it out in his mind, what I'm going to do, what entrances I'm going to use, how I'm going to escape, all that. So he went around, 1:30 at night. Everything is still silent, there's not a pin drop silence, you know. At that time he goes, and as he had planned, got all the jewelry, everything he got. The jahaz, the mahar, people's personal jewelry, all that, everything he got it. And he got his whole bundle, and he's leaving the house. As he's come to the courtyard of the house, there he sees now that Subah Sadiq is over. He discovers that Subah Sadiq is over now. Fajr Namaz time has already entered. And then he says, no, but I pledged with my Shaykh that I'm going to call the Azan at the pitch of my voice and I'm going to read my Namaz the moment the Namaz time sets in. Right. So I can't break away from the promise. So at the pitch of his voice, he starts giving Azan. The whole house got up, obviously. Gave Azan. And they got up. Now, the immediate reaction was, where's the jewelry? Where's the jahaz? Where's the mahar? No sign of it. Now, they hear this Azan here, and they see a big bundle next to that person that is giving Azan. They open the bundle, everything is lying inside. So now, he's giving Azan. Let's let him finish the Azan, and then we'll get him nicely. See? After that Azan, then he started calling his Namaz. You know, let him read Namaz and all that. What type of a chore this person is now? He's chore, he's stealing, he's robbing and reading Namaz and Azan and all that. So there's mixed sentiments amongst the people. Then one person said, no, you know what? Actually, this is not a chore. He wasn't a robber. He came to save us, you see. He came to save us because someone was burglaring the house and he came in the right time. And therefore, see, all this bundle is here, the jewelry, everything is here. So perhaps this is Khizr alayhi salam, you know. He came to save us. Otherwise, you can't imagine now a robber at this point of a time, and then in a stranger's home, and he's calling out Azan and Namaz and all that. So he must be Khizr alayhi salam, you know. You know, if we got him and he got his duas, our fortune is already made. Our fortune, our future is made. So, let him take it and give him all that money, send him, give him sadaqa, everything. So our fortune will be made. This namaz, 200 people staying in that house, everybody lined up to make musafa with him, take his duas, everything. Take all that and move. Right? In the meanwhile, he could sense what they were supposed to be doing. They were supposed to kill him. But then there was a change of mind. So then he went and reported to his sheikh and said, see, you know what? It was only that azan and that namaz that saved me. It was only that azan and that namaz that saved me. And from today I'm going to leave all the stupid things of mine. All the robbing, cheating, everything, I'm going to leave it. Now this is called tariqat. Tariqat. See, that sheikh told him, you're going to continue, but you will follow this tarteeb. You will follow this tarteeb. If you follow this sequence, you will come up here. You will dump and you will throw up all your bad habits. So this is called tariqat, right? Now that tariqat is not compulsory. Like I said, in order to learn the Quran and Hadith, you don't have to come to the madrasa. Someone is doing some personal studies by someone, right? He can also learn the Quran and the Hadith. But that's not the general take. The general take is you have to follow a procedure, go through examination, etc., all that. Then eventually you come out. You want to become a specialist, then you have to go to a school, then university, then specialize in hospital, internship. After so many years, then you specialize. So this is how, this is the procedure. But the procedure itself is not a compulsory ingredient. But if you don't follow the procedure, then generally, then you don't come out anywhere. So same in tasawwuf, now this is a certain procedure. So the procedure is not the goal. But you honor the procedure, you follow the procedure, you come to the goal. Like I say, the procedure, when you want to do hajj, then the procedure is not to apply for a
It's not compulsory and for us to go and apply for a passport, to go and take a photo and then fill that passport form and then board the plane and do all this, going to one airport, to the other airport, all that. Immigration, that was not compulsory. It wasn't a requirement of the Hajj. You will not say that if someone didn't follow all his immigration rules and all that, that his Hajj is not valid. Will you say that? That he didn't have a passport, he didn't do all these things here, and he just did his Hajj. By some luck, he did his Hajj. So will you say that his Hajj is incomplete? You will not say that the Hajj is incomplete. So one is that procedure. The procedure is not compulsory. Right? But adatan, without following that procedure, you can't get up to that goal. That's the adat. In the school it's the same, the madrasa is the same. Then in tasawuf it's also the same, that they will give you a certain procedure. That sheikh will look, he will think, now, right, this is the case that's before me. What type of a tariqah, what method, what methodology must I approach? You may call it a tariqah, a methodology. Methodology to take the person to a certain end. He wants to come to a certain end. He wants to come to that end where, as though he can see Allah Ta'ala in all facets of his life, every dimension of his life, and he can see Allah Ta'ala. Whether it is his domestic life, whether it is his public life, whether it is his business life, whether it is his private life, whether it is his public life, every dimension of his life he can see Allah Ta'ala. With his majesty, with his glory, with his beauty and greatness, with his kindness and compassion, you're seeing Allah Ta'ala all the time. So you want to get there. When you want to get there, then they put you into a certain procedure. If you want to get there, then we will ask you to follow a certain procedure. Like we'll ask you, for example, then, don't talk unnecessarily, don't meet up unnecessarily, focus, don't break your focus, do this thing. Now this is a methodology, a procedure, a methodology. This was not for us. But without this methodology, you can't, other than you can't reach up there. You try what you want to get up there, then you can't get up there. So the Shaykh will employ his reason, will employ his understanding. I need to take this person, this is the end that I need to bring the person to. But for me to get this person to that end, then I'll have to put him into a certain exercise, into a certain training I'll have to put him through. If I put him into the training, then he will come there, inshallah. So that is just a methodology, right? And everything that you are wishing for and desirous of, they will ask you to come into a certain procedure. One friend of mine goes for boxing training, right? So I asked him, how's the boxing? He says, it's not so easy as you think. I said, so what's so difficult about it? He says, no, you don't just go and box like that. He says, there's a certain way you have to punch. And on your feet also, there's a certain way how you will stand. Otherwise, if you don't punch in a certain way, then you will hurt yourself. You have to use your hands also, but in a certain way. You know, and you have to stand on your feet also in a certain way. Then they'll put you on a certain diet, right? Number three, they will ask you to refrain from certain things. So, I think, well, what do you mean by refrain from certain things? You know, because it was a little bit curious. So this is for that week that you're going for that rigid training that you can't sleep with your wife also. So I said, they can't make it. How can they pick it? I said, well, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. Don't imagine that they won't pick it up. He says, one day I went, I'm in the training, rigid training. The trainer told me, you did something last night. I was shocked. How did he pick it up? That it impacted on his performance. Although there was a permissible thing, but the trainer told him, leave it out. For this week, when you're coming for the practice, then you will leave this out. And the trainer, he picked it up. And this is what he did. He said, you've been cheating on me. So that friend of mine says, no, I didn't say yes, I didn't say no, because I knew I was guilty, right? So I just kept quiet. So what I'm getting at, that procedure wasn't a compulsory thing in order to become a boxer. But if you don't follow that procedure, then you can't become a good boxer. Right? You need to box and you need to have that stamina, that strength, and all that maneuvers you need to have. But for that, you have to go through these procedures. You go through that procedure, Allah Ta'ala willing, you will come there. So, when we talk of tasawuf, then this is that procedure that we're talking of. Now, the mashayikh will use different procedures for different individuals. Right? You see, they will ask you to do a zikr jahri, for example, right? Zikr with a little bit of a loud voice, audible voice, they'll ask you to do it. Right? Sometimes they will ask you to strike your head Right. So now all these things here are not sunnah, they are not mustahab, they are not faraz, they are not wajib. Right. You don't get any sawab. For striking your head from one side to the other side, you don't want to get any sawab. No additional sawab you're going to get. Right. They will ask you to do some meditations, right? So the meditating itself is not an act of sawab, right? Or they will ask you to remain silent, not to talk, right? Unless there is a pressing need, then you must talk. They will ask you not to meet. Unless there is a very solid need, you will not meet, right? Now these things, you can't say it's compulsory, you can't say it is mustahab, you can't say it's sunnat, you can't say it's wajib. But in order for you to get up there, then you have to follow this procedure. There, in order for you to secure your Hajj passport, you have to do something haram also. You have to take your snaps, right? Haram also. But you didn't bat an eye. You said, hey, I need to do my Hajj, and for that I need to do this. You didn't bat an eye. When you had to take a photograph, you went and took the photograph. When you had to take a photograph for your wife also, you did all that. Because you know, without that, other than I can't get up there. So, in many things in life, then there are certain procedures that are required. Now they talk of, for example, women's jamaat, right? Now you look at a woman who is outgoing, right? She is driving, she is gymming, and she's got her office of her own, she's practicing something out of the house, she's not clad correctly. She is doing everything that a man will do. Everything that a man will. She's consulting, she's going out, she's driving, she's gymming, she's jogging on the road, she's doing everything. Suddenly, she heard one Mawla Khatani's bayan, and she got shaken up now. So Mawla speaks also with a lot of authority, a lot of might he speaks. So she heard the bayan, and she got shaken up. When she got shaken up now she's thinking to herself, now, hey, how must I come right? Is there any procedure that will bring me onto the track? I am completely off. I need to come onto the track. Now, what options do I have? How do I go about doing it? Understand? How do I go about doing it? In the meanwhile, I am shaken up to the root. If I don't do it, I'm going to toast and roast in the fire just now. But if I do it, then how do I do it? Must I throw up all my practice, everything, and I just carry on? What's going to happen to me? How am I going to continue the household expense? So all these 101 ideas will be coming to her mind, storming her mind. So this type of woman will tell her, right, you go in the woman's jamaat. Right? Like I said, you took that photograph also because you had to do that Hajj. Whether that Hajj was faraz or it was Nafal Umrah, but you took that photograph and you went. Right? Though it was a Nafal thing, it was a mustahab thing, but you took that passport. In that passport, you have to do all these things here, right? But you did all that in order to achieve that. Right? So the same now you need to get yourself right. That girl needs to get herself right. She needs to come onto the track. She can't continue like this, like a monkey advertising her body, everything. She can't carry on like this. Now she needs to come on track. Now how does she go about coming on track? So then you'll tell her, all right, you can't come straight. Immediately to take that high jump, you may just break your leg, right? So, but for you to learn deen and practice deen is compulsory. Like Hajj is compulsory for us. So by the same token, for you to learn deen, practice deen is not mustahab, it is for us. Right. Now how are you going to get the deen? So you can't do it one shot, so I'd go into this woman jamaat. So in the woman jamaat, they will talk about akhirah, they'll talk about jannah, they'll talk about jahannam. There'll be some woman will be crying in tahajjud, in dua, etc. Right? She is watching this over a period of 40 days or whatever. She's watching all this, she's observing. So when she's moving with this type of crowd, then that colors will begin to rub onto her. You know, I need to do something of my akhirat as well. I got children, they're growing up just now. If I'm going on the wrong end, then they'll all go wrong. They'll all get lost. So what do I do? Now, this will be a catalyst in her life. It will be a realization. Something will come and strike her. No, I need to change. I need to make adjustments. Suddenly now, she says, no, I'm closing my office. Now I'm at home. I'm doing something from home. I'm not driving. I'm not gymming. I'm not running in the streets and all that. Now I'm at home. But now, if she doesn't follow this procedure, can she come here? Other than, it's not possible that she comes here. But for her to practice deen, learn deen, wasn't it compulsory? It's compulsory. Now, what's the procedure? So we'll tell her, all right. There's not something to be encouraged and you know, the whole world must do it. But then the person is already in this problem, he's already in this fix. When he's in the fix, he needs to come on the right. So when he needs to come into the right, then is there any procedure available? So you know, go in the woman's jamaat, 40 days, whatever, and just follow the pattern. You will get some fikr of the akhirat, qiyamah, jannah, jahannam, etc. You will come onto the right. Now she's no more jogging on the street. She's no more going into the streets alone. She's not going to the malls and doing her own shopping. She's not gymming around, right? She's not driving around. Now, from all the wrongs that she has done, now she's cut down 80-90%. But for her to be able to come here, she had to go through a procedure. Now, this procedure, that is called tariqat. Procedure, methodology, this is called tariqat. You will not say now that going out in jamaat was compulsory, faraz, wajib. You will not say that. But adatan, right? When you're talking of the practicality, in practicality, if you don't do this, then you're not going to reach up here. Ask anybody, the mechanics of the whole thing is that if you don't want to do this, then you'll remain where you are. That's the mechanics. So you'll have to follow this procedure in order to reach up here. So in everything, لِكُلِّنْ جَعَلْنَا مِنْكُمْ شِرْعَةً وَمِنْهَاجًا. One is the shariat, do's and don'ts, constitution. And one is procedures. You follow those procedures, you'll come there. So the same applies to a khanqah as well. Person not doing things right, he's drugging, womanizing, everything he's doing. Now, to bring him suddenly from one end to the other end, he's not going to happen. He knows that it is haram. Doesn't he know that drugging is wrong? Doesn't he know that womanizing is wrong? He knows it's wrong. But he doesn't have the heart to do it. So then we put him into a procedure. He comes to us, we visit him, we talk to him, right? We put him onto a procedure. Then when you put him to a procedure, he'll do certain things, he'll leave out certain things, gradually he'll come. Then when he comes and then you see the commitment in him, then you take him from one level to the second level. Suddenly now all those, even those things that were permissible, he begins to leave it out. He was drugging, now he's not even smoking cigarettes. He's not even joining a company that would puff cigarettes or whatever. He's not even doing that. So he disdains the practice so much that he's left out completely. Don't want to be anywhere near there. Don't want to even talk about these type of things. So you see from one end, the end that he was, and now he's coming, where he's coming in. But for him to come to this point, he had to go through a procedure. He had to go through a methodology, right? After going through that methodology, that procedure, then he came up to this point. Right? Now, methodology, procedure is used in everything. Everything in your life, you go through it. You go to a Qari class, right? So, the Qari sahab saying, open your mouth, shout, Alif. Bhai, Qari sahab, I didn't come for that. I came to read, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Bhai, whatever it is, you read this Alif. And this is how you write the fatha. But Qari sahab, you know, in the Sahaba Ikram's time, there was no such a thing like fatha, zamma, and jazam, and mother, all these things were not there. No, there was no signs and all that, fatha, zamma, and all that. When you came out with fatha, it's all bidat you're doing. Zabar, zair, patient, where Sahaba's time it was? It was there in Sahaba's time. So Qari sahab would say what? Why? If you're not going to follow this procedure, then you're not going to come there. Won't the Qari sahab say that? Khara zabar and khara zair and all that. Right, fatha, zamma, pesh, and all that. You see, you don't want to follow this, then you can't come up here. You will have to follow this, then you'll be able to recite correctly. You'll be able to recite with tajweed, etc. If you don't follow it, then you can't. So that, what do you call that? You call it a procedure, right? You'll call it a procedure, a methodology. If you follow it, inshallah, one day your recitation will become very beautiful, become excellent. Any masjid in the world, you want to go and perform namaz, lead namaz, you can do it. You want to teach others, you'll be able to teach others as well. But you fail to go through this procedure and you want to become an excellent reciter, then you can't do it. Now you can tell the Qari sahab 101 time, but this, you know, this zabar, zair, pesh, and all, I never came across in one hadith, not in Bukhari Sharif, not in Tirmidhi Sharif, not in Muslim Sharif, I didn't see it anywhere. So the Qari sahab will tell you, it's a procedure. It's not the maqsood, it's not wajib, But without this, you can't, other than you can't come up there. So, whichever science you take, then there is a procedure. Right? You want to learn Arabic, they'll say you have to do Nahu, Sarf, Balagat, all that, right? Say no, but Sahaba Ikram time, they weren't doing Fa'ala, Fa'ala, Fa'alu, and all that, Alu and Banana and all. They weren't doing all these things. So he'll tell you, why, if you don't do that Fa'ala, Fa'ala, you're not going to do that, you're not going to come, right? So no, but nowhere, show me in Bukhari Sharif where it came. Where it came in Tirmidhi Sharif. No way it came. So why are you inventing? So the Karisa will tell you again, the Moran will tell you again, that you're not going to do this grammar, you're not going to reach here. You'll have to do this grammar in order to be able to appreciate the Quran, the word of Allah Ta'ala, the message of Allah Ta'ala. If you want to understand it, you want to appreciate it, you'll have to go through this whole line here. Moran, all day I'm just doing Fa'ala, Fa'alu, and Ismat Tafzeen. What things I'm doing, I'm deprived of reading the Quran Sharif. You're depriving me of reading Quran Sharif. What will you tell him? But it is not a deprivation. It's actually a method to bring you right, to bring you right top. It's not to deprive you. Won't you say the same thing? Say the same. So in every field, I'm saying, whether you're going to Hajj, whether it's a woman's Masturat Jamaat, whether it is a Qari class, whether it is a class that's going to be teaching you Quran and Hadith, etc., all will require some procedure. You will have to follow the procedure for you to come up there. You don't follow the procedure, you can't come up. Try what you want, but you can't get up there. Allah Pak Tawfiq Nasib Kare. We in this day, we are stormed with so much of information that our brains have become all either skew or it's all corrupt or it's deficient. So we haven't got the time to sit, relax and think and put the facts in place. If we put all the facts in place, then our minds will tell us, we'll have to do it. In order for us to get there, we'll have to do these procedures. We don't adopt these procedures, we can't get there. We want to do it, right? To preserve deen. So for you to preserve deen, you have to do those things. You don't do those things, you're not going to be able to preserve deen. So that can happen if we relax, think, understand, analyze, try and reason. But we don't give our chance to do it. We just sort of press a button, everything may just happen. Everything may just happen automatic. So this world doesn't operate in that way. So you have to give yourself a chance, think about it, reason, understand, analyze, put the facts together. You do all these things here, then you come to right conclusions. Allah Baktu Finis.
So now we will discuss some of the adab pertaining to the day of Jumu'ah. That for a believer, the day of Jumu'ah is a weekly Eid, that where a person would present himself in the court of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the masjid. Then there are certain things that one should try to carry out on the day of Jumu'ah. That is, one should have a ghusl, and preferably on a Jumu'ah, a person should try to remove all unwanted hairs, clip his nails, etc. And then one should wear good clothing, and as explained yesterday, good clothing means refers to the clothing of the pious of that time. Then one should try to come early to the masjid, and before coming one would apply itar, and if one wants to apply some oil to the hair, then one should apply some oil. Then when coming to the masjid, one should try to come walking to the masjid. Then upon coming to the masjid, one shouldn't sit at the back of the masjid, but as close as possible to the minbar, to where the khatib will be delivering the khutbah. But in doing so, again, one shouldn't cause taklif to any person. For example, jump over a person. If there's a very small gap, then a person squeezes himself between the two people. But rather, without causing inconvenience, a person should sit as close as possible to the front. Then, once the azan of Jumu'ah takes place, then one, if one is out of the masjid, then all worldly activities should be stopped. If a person is engaged in any type of business, then that should also be stopped, and a person should come to the masjid immediately. Then while the khutbah is carrying on, then one should listen attentively to the khutbah, and one should not discuss anything or talk to any person, but rather a person should remain completely silent. Then on the day of Jumu'ah, one should increase his recitation of Durood Sharif, and one should also recite Surah Al-Kahf, and the Sunnat Surahs, those that are leading the Jumu'ah Salah, is to recite in the first rakat Surah A'la, Sabbih Isma Rabbika Al-A'la, and in the second rakat Surah Ghashiya, Hal Ataka Hadithul Ghashiya, or to recite in the first rakat Surah Jumu'ah, and in the second rakat Surah Munafiqun. Then on Friday after the Asr Salah, then it is preferable that a person recites 80 times the durood upon Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammadin Nabi al-Ummi wa ala alihi wa sallim taslima. And also, whilst when the azan before the khutbah is being given, that is the second azan of Jum'ah, then those that are listening, the audience, they should not reply to that azan, but they can answer from within their heart and within their minds. And likewise, as certain ulama explained, that the period and time between the two khutbahs is a period of acceptance of du'as. So if a person wants to make du'a at that time, then one shouldn't make a verbal du'a, but a du'a from within his heart and within his mind. And also the ulama explained that another time on the day of Jum'ah when du'as are accepted is the time after Asr and before Maghrib. So one should also avail himself during this time to make du'a to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for this is a time when du'as are accepted.